Welcome to La Liga Weekly. They've gone to extraordinary lengths to discriminate against Real Madrid now, going so far as to invent new technology. And I don't mean the boards, I mean Mark Bartra's levitation boots. Or maybe he's always worn them because he's only 5'2" and he plays as a centre-half. What a weekend. We kicked off on Friday, stopped, had a 10-minute argument about the ball, kicked off again. Then Real Madrid lost. That's the crucial bit, I suppose. We'll find out from Terry soon whether it was all just because of the officials. But congratulations to Troy Parrott. I said congratulations to Troy Parrott. I asked Google AI, who was the last Irishman to score in La Liga? And it said John Aldridge. And I replied, are you sure it wasn't Ian Hart? And it said, no, you're quite right, it was Ian Hart. That's intelligence for you. Barca continue their early season struggles at Valencia. We'll discuss what's the barrier stopping them from scoring more than five and whether Hansi Flick has to go. Do we have another challenger? Atletico Madrid? Ah, maybe not. Oh, Villarreal? Well, they won an XG again, so that sort of counts. And what about the mighty Alaves, or second-place Alaves to you?
Yeah.
Or perhaps the unbeaten Deportivo La Coruña, inspired by Ireland's Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. He definitely is. I looked it up on AI. We've had 28 goals in the 8 games so far, and that includes Levante's 0-0 draw at Malaga. I've got this weird recollection, Terry, that Levante scored 5 goals in a game, but it can't be. I must have just made that up.
Fabulous intro.
Yes, thank you. Terry is, well, you're in your air-conditioned room at the moment, but you're sweltering in Madrid, Terry, I understand.
Honestly, just for people that are watching around the world, listening to us around the world, watching La Liga around the world, it is so hot. I mean, I was looking at the kickoff times at the weekend. Hansi Flick was the only one that had a complaint, and it was before the game, before his team 5-0, and he just said it was ridiculous. We had the footage before kickoff, and literally every single person had the fan, the classic traditional Spanish fan. There's not a lot of shade in the stadium at Mestalla, and every single person had something to try and fan the heat off them. Honestly, it's incredible. Walking away from the premises yesterday, where I did my co-coms on the Valencia Barcelona game, it was stifling, just walking around. And I looked around and I thought, there's no one else here. There's no one else on the streets. It was like 6:15 on a Sunday evening. And I thought, I'm the only English nutcase that's out walking around. So I went back to the room and got in the air conditioned room and then went out a bit later to get something to eat when it got dark and the streets were packed. So they know the routine in the cities in Spain, which are particularly hot. And at this particular moment, Madrid is boiling. And I presume Valencia, possibly Valencia, might even be warmer. But it is coastal, whereas Madrid is a city, which makes it a little bit more stifling. But so the kickoffs reasonably are later, as late as possible, the majority of them. I mean, the Barcelona one was one of the earlier ones we've had this season in one of the hottest cities that you're going to get at this moment in Spain.
I maintain that doesn't help because I think the heat of the day is late afternoon, early evening. I think that's the hottest part of the day, I think. When I look it up, I mean, I'm not there, but if you really to avoid it, you'd be playing them at 10 o'clock in the morning. If you really, sticking them at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock kind of time, it's 40 degrees or something. So
exactly. That's when I was walking around, walking back from work yesterday, and I thought, I've not experienced that for a long, long time.
Yes. Shall we go to Friday night? Shall we? The honeymoon is over.
there's no level with Real Madrid, is there? Yeah. Last week, I said on the podcast, people with the media in Spain, all media, is this better than anything that Ancelotti and Zidane did? I think, Jesus Christ, they won Champions League after Champions League. We're talking about 2 or 3 games for Real Madrid, and Jose Mourinho is the best thing since sliced bread. And then this week, it's exactly as you said, the honeymoon is over. The players have all got the ump with it. They're all playing on the left again. They're all doing what they want again. And you look at the game in general, and they should have won. I mean, they've hit the post. Valles. When you're Betis, you need the crowd to be behind you, temporary stadium, but there's still a great atmosphere. You need everybody to play to their maximum, and you need your goalkeeper to be an 11 out of 10. That's the script. And he was, Alvaro Valles. He was inspirational in goal, not just the penalty save, but other saves he made. So on any other given day, Real Madrid should have won that game. But because they don't, then the magnifying glasses out. And literally this week, it's the conspiracy against them. Negreira is coming back out again. That's it. And Barcelona are not even playing in this game. They're not doing that to do in this game. And yet, the focus is on Negreira. And you kind of forgotten that's a bloke's name as well. It's some sort of, it sounds like some sort of, I guess it is quite sordid, but it sounds quite weird that they keep throwing this up. There are controversial issues in this game, but by and large, Real Madrid played, they should have won. And normally, in those circumstances, when you have the chances, you have the attempts at goal, and you would normally win a game. But in this one, it was the script was written. Troy Parrott coming off the bench, Vaez making the penalty save, a goal disallowed when it looked like Espy had equalised, which it kind of would have been a nice problem for Jose, because Espy, when he comes on, and if he keeps doing that, eventually somewhere along the line, it's got to be, well, we actually might be a better team with him starting. Where do you fit him in? Which is a similar story to Barcelona. Barcelona have got a player I think they need to. I will ask the question when we come to the Barcelona game. But it's not a catastrophe losing at Betis. Betis are a good team. It's a difficult place to go and get a result. It proves it's not a two-team league, that Real Madrid and Barcelona are going to win every game and decide who wins the league on the Clásicos. So it's not a huge shock, and it shouldn't be a huge problem, but it is. So when you have that roller coaster of Real Madrid, of the best thing since sliced bread, and now it's all falling apart. They're picking out clips of Vinicius kind of ignoring a handshake with Jose Mourinho. They're picking out a clip of Rudiger, who didn't even play, barging into Jose Mourinho, knocking him to the side as Jose Mourinho was trying to shake people's hands. All the silly little things you can find if you look hard enough, in like little reactions on the bench and stuff like that. It's a unique football club. It really is. It honestly, it really is. It's the highs and the lows are extreme, and there's nothing. There literally is nothing in between. It's that's why it's such a unique football
I don't know the why. That's because it's a unique football club, I might argue, as in the extraordinary success of Real Madrid has created this magnifying glass with a spotlight shining through a magnifying glass, to continue the metaphor, which means that nothing's allowed to be ordinary. A referee can't make a mistake. It has to be a conspiracy. So, yeah.
And you can't lose a game when you've been unlucky. There'll be other teams this week that we're looking at that have been unlucky to lose or not win in any league, not just this league, in any league. And yet with Real Madrid, it's that's never the case. It's if they lose a game and they're unlucky to lose a game, it's someone's fault and there's a
So
problem.
you can't
And
just say, "Oh well, lads, it wasn't to be. Let's roll on. It's only one out of 38." So give us a bit of detail. I mean, obviously, as I said, they kicked off and then decided to stop and have an argument about the ball technology, the offside. Obviously, using ball technology, because the bloke with the flag and the other blokes with the television, they couldn't call an offside apparently. I mean, they had to go back, didn't they, to find the offside, as in it was the previous phase of play. But it was fair enough, wasn't it? I mean, it's no one voted for this before we had VAR, but this is where we're at. You go back and find it. It wasn't like it was a minute back or anything,
No,
was it? So,
it was the same attack, wasn't it?
yeah.
It was part of the build-up. I didn't know it. I couldn't see it at first, and until they went far enough back, and then you
We're
go,
looking at the
"Oh,
wrong
there it
thing, aren't
is."
we? We're looking at his foot against the defender, aren't you? Thinking, what that? What? I don't see it. But then, yeah, he was offside when the ball, because it came to him. He pushed it wide, and at
He
that
kept
point,
the
he was offside.
possession. He kept the possession, which led to that possession. That so it was offside. A crying shame for Espy, and that would have been a problem. A nice problem, as I say, that if he keeps coming off the bench and scoring goals, and they're playing with a traditional striker, Mbappe missed chances. But again, he's the perfect example of a Real Madrid legend star. He's either the best player in the world, which arguably he is, or the worst player in the world. He wouldn't get a game for Malaga at the moment, if you according to the media regarding him. It's nothing in between. Every striker can miss chances. Every striker will have games where they don't, they have one of those days.
Yeah, let's do a
So,
bit. Let me give you the stats. XG, so they lose 1-0, right? XG, 3.46. Eight shots on target, seven big chances, 51 touches in the opposition box, hit the woodwork three times. I mean, doesn't seem like
and
a
lose one
crisis.
nil. And then the crisis then is compounded by the fact everyone's looking for the reason why. This happens. It's sport. This happens. And it will happen to Barcelona at some stage this year where they dominate and have loads of and lose 1-0 or drop points, draw to 1-1 it, against Levante or something. It can happen. But it's not allowed to happen with Real Madrid. Those stats are ridiculous. I mean, how that they should win that comfortably. They haven't. They've ended up losing. They don't even get a point. And they miss a penalty. So
So
it's just one of
the
those things.
controversy, it's not real controversy. It is, that is the rules, that over the penalty, over the non-retaking of the penalty. This is where we get so forensic with Real Madrid, isn't it? And they wanted the penalty to be retaken because it's saved and then cleared, and Bartra was over
Beat
the line, but he hadn't put
it.
his foot down according to the
Yep.
VAR, so therefore it's you're allowed to
Did
carry
you?
on. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't. I must confess, I didn't know that law. And
Yeah.
when I saw the replay, I thought, oh, well, that's going to be taken again. He's in the
Yeah.
box. I had no idea the law was that you could jump and be midair as
Yeah.
long as you're not touching the floor. And I put a post the next about Carl Lewis, some defender making a run from the halfway line. And Mbappe's taking the penalty and leaping. And you could land next to him, couldn't you? It's not that long a stretch to jump from the edge of the box to the penalty spot. You could actually be mid-air and Mbappe's taking that. I think there are other laws applying to it where one foot has to be behind. I'm not sure. So
It's fair enough,
effectively,
because
Bartra claims he did. Have you heard the story?
no.
He claims he's got a friend who is a lower level referee who told him this law
Okay, right. Okay.
a week ago.
Yeah.
So he thought he would try it. Now, the timing of it, so it's not by luck. He claims he did it on purpose. So, but the timing of it, you can't land. You've got to make sure you don't land before Mbappe takes it.
And he doesn't know, because no one just takes a penalty these days, do they? They don't just walk up and
No,
take
it's
it.
that,
They're, yeah. So yeah, we'll have to watch out for Mark Bartra next time there's a penalty. Troy Parrott. Let's discuss.
I can imagine doing squat jumps on the side of the to put the pen. So the penalty takers, a penalty taken there, will be looking behind their shoulder to see what Mark Bartra
Mark
is up
Bartra is going to come
to. Mark
rebounding.
getting a big bit of plasticine and making sure that his foot doesn't overstep like a long jump attempt. And it was a good save. It wasn't the worst penalty in the world, and it was a good save. But Bartra is there to kick the ball off for the corner, and then the chaos ensues. But yeah, it was an impressive save from Vaz.
Yeah, tell us about Troy Paris.
He looks really good, doesn't he? Irritatingly, Spurs let him go a couple of years ago, and he's gone and made his career elsewhere in Holland. And yeah, he looks the real deal. I mean, Cucho Hernandez is a good player, but at the moment, I'm saying Troy Parrott offers a little bit more in terms of the centre forward position. His hold up play was good. He works the channels. He was aggressive. He pinned the Real Madrid centre backs quite comfortably, I'd have to say. There was a couple of occasions where the centre backs, they don't like that type of centre forward. They really don't like someone who's up against them, who's going to be a pain in the arse all night long, that's going to be aggressive. And they didn't like that. So he made a big difference when he came on. It wasn't just the goal. I mean, he had a goal disallowed last week. He comes off the bench this week and scores a goal. It's brilliant. It's brilliant for the Irish people. It's brilliant for people watching the UK. Premier Sports are absolutely delighted. I think they've been shuffling around the schedule now to get the Betis games on because Troy Parrott is there. I imagine the Irish pubs in the city of Seville were clasping their hands together because I'm not being funny. It's a big deal for the Irish, to have a player like Troy Parrott go over to a team that's in the Champions League. And to start off as well as he has done, I can you saw the reaction on social media. I can imagine the Irish looking forward to many a weekend out in the city of Seville, going to watch their star striker, and he's been fantastic. Good work from Betis to tie up that deal to get him in. And he looks to be a really good asset to them.
Yes. Right, let's move on and do Barcelona. So it, tricky game away to Valencia. You can
Sorry, can I just
stumble.
go back
Yeah,
to the
go
Real Madrid stuff when I joked about it was the same as last year
on.
and the year before? It kind of was. When you look at the first thing I noticed it watching the game, confirmed it. When you look at the match stats, they're all on the left again. Even Bellingham was left-sided. Vinicius was left-sided. And Mbappe was left-sided. Kukurea was pushing down the left flank. I looked to see if Camavinga was there, but he wasn't. Camavinga actually did hold his position in central midfield. Fede Valverde's coming in for a lot of criticism because of his performances as part of the double pivot, which is meant to be a double pivot with Bellingham ahead of them. Vinicius on the left, Arda Güler on the right. He doesn't play on the right. He tucked in. So the only player on the right was Denzel Dumfries. So there are the same issues. And Camavinga, to his credit, his position, average position, is exactly where he should be. Fede Valverde's position, therefore, is he's not getting the ball off the defence, so he's not taking part in the game like Camavinga does. Camavinga was getting the ball off the back and trying to be aggressive through midfield, and Valverde wasn't pushing in and getting up the other end of the pitch. So he's the one player out of all this, despite the missing loads of chances. The same issues with Vinicius, the same issues with Mbappe. Every now and then he'll have a game where he doesn't score. It's very rare. And he ends up on the left, and Bellingham ends up on the left. And people like me look at it and go, Guardiola's not given any width on the right. But Fede Valverde is the one when you're looking at and think, actually, if he's not a double pivot, and is he going to be the old Fede Valverde? And he's neither at the moment. So he doesn't look comfortable. He's not showing up for the ball off of Housen and whoever's playing centre back, Kanate. He's not helping them, and he's not helping at the other end of the pitch. And there were some clips on social media where it showed him just not taking part, really. No interest in receiving the ball off the back. And then people were saying, well, is he getting in the box at the other end? Is he doing this? Is he doing that? So tactically, technically, there are issues with Real Madrid. But they still should have won this game. So it's going to be interesting to see how Jose deals with that. Is he going to deal with it, or is he just going to be, do you know what? Ancelotti tried it. He couldn't get to the bottom of it. He couldn't get them to do this. Jose has made a point of saying it's not two players plus nine. It's a team of 11. I guess he meant Vinicius and Mbappe. So there are issues that weren't going to be sorted out in three or four games, and there's still to be resolved. It's going to be fascinating to watch to see if he can change it.
Right. Well, part Real Madrid and well, the Champions League starts tonight. Not tonight, tomorrow night. It's Monday, isn't it? Yes. Tuesday night, Champions League starts. Valencia nil, Barcelona five, just the five for Barcelona. Yeah, psychological barrier, Terry. It's a real problem for Hansi Flick's men.
Yeah, joking aside, I mean it's a game you I was working on. You go into it and you think, yeah, Barcelona are big favourites. I did Valencia a week or so ago and they were poor against Depor. There's not a lot there to that gives you inspiration. The manager doesn't appear to be able to inspire anybody at the moment. Bizarre team selections, and you're thinking, why is Jose Gaia not playing in these circumstances? Let's be honest, the guy should have left 5 years ago when Real Madrid, Barcelona, one of the big clubs around Europe in the Premier League. He was playing for Spain. He was a big deal. He probably should have left. In reflection now, he's been loyal to the club, and suddenly you're looking and thinking the manager's bombed him out. It's because he's only got a year left of his contract, allegedly. You're thinking, but all those years he stayed with you when he should have gone.
Yeah.
Everyone else has left, and now you're going to turn on him because I don't know whether he's not signed the contract. He's only 31. So that but. You're kind of looking and thinking, I can't get it out of my head that this is Valencia at home. So this should be a tough game. But the reality is, they're pathetic at the moment. And it was five, it could have been 10. And Barcelona played in spurts, they played at half pace. It was down to the individuals that wanted to rack up the goals when they sort of burst into life and took the game a little bit more serious. Oh, Valencia then attack and then he scored. We better score again than they did. It was that sort of game. It was that easy for them. The player I was mentioning earlier about that Carlos Espi, if he keeps coming off the bench and scoring and keeps Real Madrid something different, is Fermín López. How it'd be interesting from Barcelona fans, if you're picking your best 11, do you have him in it and where? Now, I know it's extremely difficult and it doesn't happen that often when everyone's fit and you've got a classic game and you've got to pick your gala 11, as they call it in Spain. But who would you leave out for Fermín López? Because he gives you, he's a special player. He really is. I mean, he's goal hungry, he's shot hungry. I've criticised him for shooting too much. And I've said before in the past that I watch teams, I watch strikers, I've coached teams, I've been a striker. And sometimes you have games where you just can't get a shot away, you don't have an attempt on goal. For some strikers, it's too regular. For some teams, it's too regular. Fermín López has shots in every single game. I know he's playing for Barcelona, so that's the advantage. But even when Barcelona are playing poorly and they're under pressure, he's still having shots at the other end. And those type of players, they do rack up the goals. Now, my question is, when in your strongest 11, does he play? And should he play to Barcelona fans?
Yeah, I mean, if
Is
I'm
it?
not I'm not a Barcelona fan, I'll give you an answer. Probably not. As in, if you what they're going to play 60 games this season, and you make five substitutions a game, six if you have extra time. How many times are you really putting out your best team? And the answer is almost never. As in, you've got to keep rotating it. At some point they're going to give Lamine a bit of rest. Some point they've got to give Rafinha some rest, haven't they? So that isn't that the ideal for a team of that caliber, that you get yourself in a situation where you can't really pick your best, where you're picking from five or six attackers for like four attacking positions.
So say Champions League final next summer.
So I guess he's off the bench.
Everyone's fit. But is that because he's an? It's hard to make this accusation. Is it because he's a homegrown talent and not been bought for, which happens at other clubs, not so much at Barcelona? I mean, they had four 19-year-olds yesterday. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, what other team of that status as a bunch of teenagers playing? They're lucky, most teams are lucky if you have one. Nine said one teenager. They have four: Yamal, Kubasi, Xabi Espart, But it seems to me I can't figure out the front three at the moment: Rafinha, Yamal on the right, Gordon or Adeyemi. Probably Gordon at the moment. He needs a goal. The longer that goes, the more anxious and uptight he's getting. You can see a little bit of anxiety on his face when he misses a chance. Midfield: Rodri and Pedri are automatic picks. Then it's the one ahead of them, isn't it? And do you go Dani Olmo? Probably. Or do you go Fermin?
So I guess
That's
that's you that's what you
the
you
choice.
yeah that's what you're playing for. And I mean, David Olmo's been he's a sub a lot in the World Cup, wasn't he? And he came on in games, didn't he? So he's done that. And I guess that's another challenge for that sort of player, for that sort of team. You have to be a good substitute as well. You have to be able to come on into a team and not take 5, 10 minutes to get up to the speed of the game and instant and come on and have watched it and be careful and know what you're doing and stuff like this. You can't run on and have a run around anymore.
And if you're putting Fermin on him, the part he plays in the goal, I think it's for Lamine Yamal's last goal, where he sprints 60 meters flat out. It runs like an absolute nutcase. They're 4-0 up. And he sprints and he sprints. No, it's a Rafinha's goal. And he's 20 yards behind Lamine Yamal and he underlaps him and he goes past him and he's giving everything he can into a sprint to get past Lamine Yamal to give him the option of a forward pass. And I think he does attempt a shot because it's Fermin. I'm going to say he loves a shot and I think it's a shot and he drags it and it goes across and Rafinha taps it in. But I mean, it's. The amount of effort he puts into it. And it was interesting hearing Pedri after the game when they interviewed him and they said, with no centre forward, that's 17 goals you've got. Everyone was wondering who was going to play up front. And he straight away went, this team will have no trouble. It's not going to be a problem, us scoring goals. And you kind of think, yeah, I think we all agree that. Now, when they play tougher opposition, I mean, at the moment, if they played Elche, Athletic Club was a 2-0 victory. It'd be Rayo 5-2, it'd be Valencia 5-0. So there's tougher tests to come. The tougher tests are, they're not even around the corner, if I'm being honest. And I've made this point about this international break with the Champions League, with a transfer window. Try not to drop too many points. Villarreal have, Atletico have now. Real Madrid have lost the game. Barcelona have won all of their games. Their next games are Levante, Racing, Sevilla, and then the international break. And they've got finals in the Champions League. I expect them to win every game. I don't
Yeah.
expect them to drop any of those games.
So, Feyenoord Wednesday, early game, don't miss it. Are you changing around a lot? I mean, there were some good, if you look at the bench from the other day, some good players not playing. So, Adeyemi got half an hour, didn't he? Olmo, 15 minutes. Gabriel Jesus, are you playing against Feyenoord? Or are you
Probably
starting?
not
No, yeah.
starting a stronger team.
Yeah.
Eric Garcia unfortunately came up a cropper,
Yeah.
didn't he, with the blow to the face. So Koundé came on. Koundé probably didn't start because he probably plays against Feyenoord.
Yeah. Balde.
Balde is another one. Balde, I
Yeah.
mean, you've got Cancelo
Yeah.
playing left back. So Balde's suddenly gone probably third choice left back.
Yeah. Gavi didn't get on. So, but you're saying something along the lines of, depending on everyone's 100% fitness and whatever, but you're saying you're going strong against Feyenoord.
Yeah, I would personally. I mean,
Yeah.
you don't want to drop points at home to Feyenoord. Go strong for an hour. Rodri played. Did he play all the game? No, he came off. Pedri came off. Kubacsy came off. Anthony Gordon came off. Eric Garcia obviously came off early.
Yeah.
So Rodri, in the fact he got substituted, probably starts again.
Yeah. So you think the ones who came off on the hour were Gordon, Rodri, Kubacsy, you're guessing that's because they're playing against Feyenoord. Fair enough. Anything else
And
on Barcelona?
no, I think as I say, there's tougher tests to come,
Yeah.
and but they're fun to watch. I
Yeah.
mean, their average last year was 3 goals, wasn't it? It's over four this
Yeah.
year,
Good.
so
About time they stepped it up.
it's Pedri scoring was important for them, because I don't think his form has been great. And Lamine Yamal, we've gone in the space of no time talking about Lamine Yamal. Is he finished? I mean, did he peak at 19? That World Cup that he had, stunk the place out in the World Cup and won it. And he come back in a couple of games and didn't score. Oh, look, he looks unhappy. 4 goals in his last 2 games. And to be fair, the other one was close as well. When they scored in the 6th minute, had a goal disallowed in the 9th, but they battered Valencia. I don't know what's going to happen to Valencia.
Yeah, just
I
briefly on
really don't
Valencia
know.
then. So another
Who
protest.
wants that job? Who wants that job if
Yeah.
Corberan leaves?
Yeah.
They're talking about Pablo Hernandez. I think he manages a second,
Oh,
a bit
Castellón,
involved
isn't it?
at
Where, but
Castellón. Yeah.
didn't he own it or part own it or something? So that's quite a thing to loot to leave. He can't own it, can you? Because he can't manage and so he must have
Don't know.
sold
I
his
didn't know.
stake in it and
Yeah. And I don't know. Can you manage second division and first division same season? I don't
Yeah.
know.
Oh, I thought, well, I'm going to say
Yeah.
but
Don't
the
know.
question is, why would you want it? Because he was,
Yeah.
he was part of a different era when Valencia were popular and people
Good.
they liked the
Really good.
players, yeah, and good, yeah, and they still sold players, but but they bought other good ones or developed the good ones,
Yeah. Or
but
brought them through. That was the
2014,
other thing they did.
2014, Peter Lim took over that club. It is the most
Shocking.
baffling thing. Why does he want? Why? Why is he torturing Valencia? He never goes. Hasn't been for years and years. Won't sell it. Doesn't care. It's just baffling.
I agree with you totally. I really, and it's getting worse. I mean, they survived last year, not by the skin of their teeth, because they got 10 points in the last 4 games. They played Barcelona after Barcelona had won the league, but prior to that 10 points, they missed. Do you remember they just missed out in Europe? And you're thinking, well, how the hell did that happen? They've been absolute rubbish all year,
Yeah, that's the
and they've
line,
just
though.
missed out in Euros.
And we'll have that line again this year, I think, won't we? Where mid-table could mean you almost got relegated, or it could mean you missed out on
Yeah,
Europe.
I hope so. It was fun. So that run of form they had completely saved them. Up until that point, I mean, say they got 4 or 5 points from that, they're in relegation trouble. instead of 10 out of the last 12, I think it was. I find it a crying shame, I really do. And Ron Goulet, who's the ex-Chelsea chief exec or director of football, he's the other hate figure at the Mestalla. So the protests came in the 19th minute. No one went behind the goal for 19 minutes, and they all came in and immediately started the chants of Peter Lim to leave. And Harvey Elliott must be thinking, "Oh, what have I bumped into it?" He got booed and whistled when he came on and when he touched the ball, and he did all right. He had five or six touches, and everything was fine. But it was constant. It must be tough. They've got some young players involved as well. New players that must think, "What this? It's so toxic now. It will affect the players. I don't know what it would be like. I've no idea what it's like to play in that atmosphere." Where the players are the last ones that should be blamed. But they're the focal point of the protest because they're out there on the pitch, it's 50 odd thousand, and the club is in turmoil. So if you make a bad pass playing for Valencia, the world comes crashing down on you. David Atorbe, a youngster, 18 year old, he's no experience anything like that. He's probably dreaming of playing for Valencia, coming through the ranks, gets an opportunity at 18. If he makes one bad, he did one bad cross, and the place tore him apart. So it's hard to say to the Valencia fans, give the team a chance when they see the club being run as it is. But it's only going to make things worse.
It's been a periodic problem for Valencia as long as I've been watching Spanish football, though. When we talk about the glory days and you run through all the old players, they got booed on a bad day, though. And it didn't, it's never helped. You've got, there's, but then the awkward thing then to criticise Valencia fans is that they've got a lot to complain about in the last,
Totally.
but they complained when they were in the Champions League. Honestly, when Nuno Espirito Santo finished fourth, they were booing him, and they qualified for the Champions League. He got hounded out, and then you look at what the mainly downs ever since. It's a bit roller coaster, but mainly down. Anyway,
Bored the
when
rest
it,
took
we've
them to
got,
a cup final and they didn't want him.
So we've got other stuff to discuss, Terry. Anyway, Atletico Madrid, for example, how's it going for them? So this was weird, wasn't it? So Athletic Club started terribly, then won. I get 3-0 against Atletico. But there was an element. There were two quick goals, weren't there? One was really good. The Nico Williams one. It was a bit lucky, wasn't it? Because I considered saying, because he was the only one who anticipated how inaccurate his brother's shot would be. But it did take a deflection, to be fair, Iñaki's. And then he sort of reads it, doesn't he? And he goes in and he just heads it in from close range. So Simeone cut a disconsolate figure. How bad was it for Atleti?
They weren't. They were good. They were really good. And it's just, again, like Real Madrid, these things happen. You're playing against a team that, look, I believe now after that false start they had, I think that they're going to be good to watch this year. And I think they could do really well under Terzic. It did need a change, needed a freshen up. Didn't see any evidence the first couple of games, but I am now. And I think most people are. Iñaki Williams playing as the striker, Roberto Navarro is really undervalued, if I'm being honest. And his goal was fantastic in this one. He gets the second goal. He's getting a tune out of Sunset. They could be good. But this game turns around in the beginning of the second half with two quick goals. And suddenly Atletico were dominated. They were better. They were playing well. Kangin Lee had a couple of opportunities. They weren't far. Kangin Lee hits the post early on and it goes across the face of the goal out. Doesn't go in. I don't know. Baena had a good opportunity. They were good. There was no complaints. And they're doing it under the restriction of Alvarez on the bench, Soloff injured. Soloff will be back soon. Alvarez comes back on for this game. Things are going to have to settle down with him. So that's a little bit of an obstacle for Simeone, but they were the better team. They were good. But two quick goals, you have that dismay of playing well, going one behind, and then before you know it, Jesus, we're down 2-0. There is cause for concern because that they've lost one, they've drawn one, they've only got 6 points. But it's a long season. And I think when Soloff's back, and if they get Alvarez playing properly again, and his attitude was good when he came on, he looked sharp. Didn't look particularly strong. He looks short of fitness, and but his attitude was good. They will get closer to the Real Madrid and Barcelona. It's the only thing I would say. It's becoming a similar start to what we had last season.
And
That's the
Barcelona
problem.
have won every game. Is the is
It's
yeah,
six point gap already.
yeah, yes. So it's difficult, isn't it? The margin for error, is it 5? Yeah, 5 points, isn't it? Because Atleti, you've got 7 points. Yeah,
Okay,
and
I thought it. Oh yes, sorry. Yeah, I've gone
yeah.
6, 7 points, 5 point
But
gap.
even then, I mean, Barca will drop 5 points over the course of a season, but they're not dropping many, you know, when you
No,
look at
and
it.
that's exactly, and that's the problem. And but Atleti will drop more points as well. So you don't want that.
The one
You
thing,
do you want to be changing your ambition in September, October to this top four. The ambition is to win the league.
So after the game, he does his stuff and he takes the blame, Simeone, which is fair enough. But one thing he doesn't use the word, well, obviously he's not speaking English, project, which is kind of word
Yeah.
you would hate, that, you know, old football people. But he does sort of say, oh, this is a new team, this is a. And I'm sort of thinking, yeah, but mate, you've been there since 1948 as the manager.
And it's something we've heard every year lately.
And Terzic in the other bit, he's got that excuse because he's only been there
Yeah.
5 minutes. But you haven't got that excuse because you have been the manager for more than a decade, and great. But is there ever going to be a time that he's not constantly changing everything?
I don't think the changes have been that many this season, have they? But they're significant. Griezmann leaving is a big one. The issue with Julian Alvarez has made things worse, and then Sorloth not being available. I don't think, and it's not as if they're brought in like that. I think the season before there was a lot of players brought in. This season there hasn't been as many,
So
so I
it's not
don't
the excuse
think
then, is
it's
it?
a,
It's a
it shouldn't
nor
be.
it's a normal amount of changes. Football clubs change, well,
Exactly.
a quarter of
And
their playing staff.
if you finish fourth, you're probably looking at making changes to get that improvement. So that's not an excuse. The excuse is the strikers. You lose Sorloth, Griezmann and Alvarez for the first part of the season. It's hard to overcome that when they haven't spent any money to. They did bring in. Who did they bring in? They signed a player last week. Didn't see him involved. At the weekend, they signed a striker, Jonathan David. So that kind of goes to solving a bit of problem. So we'll see how that develops. And they needed one.
And Kamate as well. I can't offer you an opinion, but there we are. He was signed, wasn't he? Deadline day. Right, let's move on and let's do a happier team at the top of the league, shall we? Alaves. You keep telling us, Terry, keep writing off Alaves' title prospects, telling us that they're only gathering points for a relegation battle. Lucas Boye would
They are.
beg to differ. 5-2 against Osasuna. So yeah, it's been whatever happens for Alaves, it's been a storming start to the season, and what a game this was.
It was a fabulous game, and I've last season I kept saying Kiko Sanchez Flores, I like what he's doing. I like the two up front. And he had a choice, Tony Fernandes, Lucas Boye, Mariano Diaz, who we completely wrote off and forgot about, ridiculed last year. The fact is, Kiko Sanchez Flores came to England and saw teams in the Championship playing two up front, because he'd never done it before. He's gone back now and he's got a 3-5-2 system, which I really enjoy watching now. Now, they're not going to win the league, they're not going to finish top four, but they are accumulating points, 10 points after four games, that gets them nearer the 40 that is going to keep them in the division. But they'll be hoping this start continues for as long as possible, ride this crest of a wave. You're going to have to go a long, long way to find a better hat trick than the one that Lucas Boye scored. And I've always been a fan of Lucas Boye. Many years ago, I watched him play against Real Madrid and I thought there's a player there. Now he's drifted around and he's come back to La Liga and he's still got the talent. I mean, the first goal was a long range effort. Excellent goal. The second one is out of this world, literally. The third one, it's a routine header, classic centre forward header, but he's the player in the build up that knocks the ball out wide. And without anyone else touching it, the winger gets out of his feet, crosses it. Lucas Boye sprinted, got himself into position, and a classic centre forward header. So, and then Mariano Diaz scores a goal as well. Pablo Ibanez scores another great goal as well. Again, crosses in the box, again, bodies in the box. They kind of, with a different style of play, they reminded me of Girona. That when the ball goes in the box, there's four or five, six players in there. And obviously, shooting practice had been the order of the week because Mariano Diaz was a decent finish. Lucas Boyd, too, long Wayne Jeffords. They're really good to watch. I don't know what it's going to be like when winter kicks in. It's not a great place to go and play if you're playing at Menzies or whatever. It's a tough place. And if they can maintain this, only good things can happen to them. And Monday night football, and it's Alavesley, and it's, I don't know, it could be anybody. I'm not being disrespectful. And you go, oh, is that the only game on tonight? It might be worth tuning in for Alavesley on Monday night.
Finally,
No,
finally, the Monday night games will be good.
Well, it's the weather's miserable. The crowd pissed off because they play on Monday nights every bloody week by the looks of it. And perhaps that's the reason why at the weekend they're playing on a weekend day. They're enjoying the atmosphere at the moment. The weather's decent and the football is brilliant from Alavés.
So Boye is on four goals for the Rafinha's top, by the way, was six. We'll get to Sergio Camello in a bit. Then there's a load of players on four, including Antti Budimir, three of which have been penalties. So he
Yeah,
likes
no.
the pen. So.
And the others are headers. They're like the header he scores in this one. Like Lamine Yamal. How did Lamine Yamal score that goal? Let's have a guess. Let's have a guess how Budimir scored. Great header and penalty.
Right, Villarreal two, Deportivo three. I think they've won all the games on XG via Villarreal. Maybe not the Atletico. I can't remember the Atletico one, but so it's the same story that we were saying last week, in that again, there's nothing sort of drastically wrong with
There
is
is.
that right? Okay, we've found something drastically wrong,
Yeah.
but time running out. It seems a ridiculous thing to say, but. It's the as you say, it's the Terry Gibson test. Don't mess up the first few weeks of the season before the international break. But boy, they messed it up. So lost 3-2 home to Deportivo, despite Adama Traore momentarily, I think, forgetting which team he was playing for.
The ball's going to Tejon Buchanan. He's not going to score from there. Somehow, Adama Traore heads it and scores from. It's a diagonal cross from right to left,
And
and it's way beyond the far post.
he has to run back. It looks like he's trying to score, is the weird thing about it, isn't it? Because he has to get beyond Buchanan, doesn't he?
Buchanan.
And he sort of storms past him. Yes, I've got my head on it. Is it? But that's your goal, mate. So what? It's an extraordinary goal. But they apart from that, Stu wants us to talk about Aubameyang. I mean, we have already, but it's start to the season. So he's involved in the first goal, isn't he, for Luis Mecruz, and then he scores the last one. And again, it's another counter-attack, isn't it? The 37-year-old
Think he's
outpacing
involved in the one that Ed Aturi scores as well. It's ridiculous. I mean, someone criticised me for saying he's not that old. Stop banging on about his age. But he's 37 and he's running from the halfway line. The problem with Villarreal is they're giving away really, really, really stupid goals. They're making terrible defensive individual mistakes. The winning, I think it's the winning goal, where they just roll it to a teammate who's not looking. And it ends up the perfect pass for Aubameyang to run through and score. There's been similar goals conceded where from Villarreal where they look really good going forward. They're doing all the right stuff in midfield. And then in every single game, they appear to be at some stage doing the most ridiculous errors defensively. So that's the problem. If they've got to clear that up. I can't have too many other complaints. I mean, they've got Champions League coming up in the midweek. So Mkhitaryan was on the bench, but you still start with, I think, Gerard Moreno and Oissy Perez. You still got good players up front. Maybe be careful on the rotations, try to get some sort of consistency with the 11. But and the biggest thing is stop giving away the ridiculously soft goals that you're doing, which is not usual. Otherwise, Marcelino would be back. But Depor, it's an astonishing story. Adama Traore, Aubameyang, Jose Jimenez played, has become the new leader immediately of Depor. We see Ronald Araujo step out of the shadows of Barcelona and everyone's rave reviews at Liverpool. I hope you see the same with Jose Jimenez. I hope he can stay fit. I hope he plays on a regular basis. They brought in Marc Cassidy on loan. So they're ambitious. And they're great. They're fun to watch. I mean, three good goals. It's they came from behind twice. Every time they go behind in this game, you're thinking, "Oh, bless them." I hate to be patronising. You're thinking, "Oh, bless, they're not going to come back from this," and they do. And then go and get the winner, thanks to the gift that they were given by Villarreal. But obviously, a lot of work for Aubameyang to do. Yeah, they're out of the newly promoted teams. Racing have not been bad, but Depor don't look in any danger of getting relegated.
Table looks about 20 years old, doesn't it? When
Yeah,
Depor in the top five, it's like, oh, we'll forget all about those. Did they go somewhere? Yes, they went somewhere. Right. So, Stu wants to know, is there a target for Aubameyang? I don't know. He's 37. I mean, he's so strong, isn't he? And athletic and graceful and stuff. He looks like he can still play for years to come. But you're reluctant to say he's going to get 15 goals or 20 goals or anything.
I'd say 15. 15 would be a wonderful achievement. And do you know what? He doesn't need the money. And so he's playing for the love of it. He's not knocking around with what he's earning. Sure, he's on a decent wage at Depor, but I know he's earned decent money over the years. So he's playing for the love of it. And that takes you a long way when you're not having to do it. You're not having to go through the grind because you don't know what to do with the rest of your life. And you need another couple of million euros per season to, make sure you're safe for the rest of your life. He's not. He's playing for the love of it, and he comes out, and he's played, doesn't it? And that type of project, going to a club that's newly promoted, a famous club, great fan base, lovely place to live. That's what appeals. And when you put all those together in a player that wants to have fun and enjoy football at the age of 37, this can be the result.
Rayo Vallecano 3, Racing Santander 2. That must have been a jumping cauldron of
Four
feverish.
thousand, 4,000 the attendance at Leganés again. I think they got notification about 11 o'clock in the morning where the game was being played. Yeah, bizarre game, wasn't it? Racing unlucky. Racing are good fun to watch. Scoring goals isn't a problem for them. They've got to tighten up defensively. And again, one of these players that we didn't expect, Lucas Boyer, to be racing up the goal scoring chance, scoring a hat trick like that. And I guess we have to say about Sergio Camello as
Yeah,
well.
second top scorer in the division.
Last season, he ended the season well, and there was a period in Nigo Perez last year, towards the end of the season, when he started playing and scoring, you're thinking, why has this bloke not been involved for 8 months? He showed a lot of promise when he was younger, ex-Atletico Madrid, that great performance in the Olympics for the Olympic team of Spain, and we barely ever saw him under Nigo Perez. And towards the end of the season, he got an opportunity and took it. And he looks a really, really talented player. Two good goals. Rayo against all the odds. Ratiu opening the goal scoring for them. Canales with a goal. Pablo Garcia. It was good to see him with a smile on his face after the emotion of him leaving Real Betis and we seeing him witnessing sitting in the car crying. To see him with a smile on his face having scored, he looks happy to be playing again for someone. It was a good game. Ridiculous ending off. Fran Perez with the stupid elbow. That was a clear red card. And I don't know what Jorge de Frutos was thinking, getting sent off on the bench after being subbed off.
I've missed this season though. Terry, random sending off of people who you don't quite know who's been sent off or why. But so well done, Jorge de
He's coming
Frutos.
back. The problem is they haven't got a million players and he's suspended and it's a problem in that position. But lucky for them, Sergio can well, it's two players in the same position. De Frutos has been playing wider of late. Fran Perez plays wide. Suddenly both are going to get suspended. Yeah, it is an issue. But I enjoyed the performance of Sergio Camello. And Rayo effectively are playing every game away from home this season, aren't they?
Yeah, got
Because we
Real
don't
Madrid.
know where the next one's going to be.
The Bernabeu, the next one. Not that much, but pretend it's a home game. The Espanyol won, Sevilla won. Sevilla was another one. We're sort of expecting, you're talking about Alaves. It's gathering points for their relegation battle. Well, Sevilla are now 4 games into the season, 7 points. And they were moments away from another win in this one, even though they played half an hour, more than half an hour with 10 men. So it's actually, they're doing all right, Sevilla.
Yeah, they are. The goal scorer, I don't know too much about, Lucas Stassin, another late arrival in the transfer window. It was always going to be untidy for Sevilla while the transfer window was open. But I think they've worked hard enough to bring players in. So they've gone from Isaac Romero to Robbie Ewart, and now they've got Lucas Stassin as well. So they're better stocked up front. I think they'll be all right because of the manager. I think the manager's got them going in the right direction. Good enough young players that are getting opportunities. They're nowhere near in as bad a state as Valencia, because they have brought young players through in the last few years. They sell too many of them, but that's the nature of Sevilla at the moment. And they were unlucky in this game. Aruna Sanganti gets the sending off. How is that not turned over by VAR? I know there's a tango after the contact, but I don't think he fouls him. I think, if anything, Roberto Fernandez clashes as much with him
Yeah,
as
so
Sanganti does with him.
he's sent off for a denying goal scoring opportunity, isn't he? But he goes down the side, gets the ball, doesn't he? And you think he hasn't gone through him to get the ball, has he? He's gone and got the ball, but
I do like the tantrums of Luis Garcia Plaza, though, when he loses it. I mean, we had that famous one where he just went berserk on the bench, didn't you remember that? When he was manager of Alaves and everyone cleared out and he was chucking everything, kicking everything, and acting like a spoiled 8-year-old. He kind of did it in this game as well, but I understand his frustrations. It's so annoying. When they've got their tablet there, haven't they? So they can see the replays. And when you see that replay, you just think, oh, it's going to be overturned. You see the complaints of the players. They knew, the Sevilla players, they knew he touched it. And I just thought, oh, it's going to be overturned. And the ref went across and looked and still chose to send him off. Ludicrous. Be interesting to know if that stands, that red card, whether he's suspended or not, because he shouldn't be. Shouldn't have been sent off, shouldn't be suspended. And they did take the lead when they were down to 10 men. Scrappy game in terms of refereeing, wasn't it? The goal that was disallowed was a confusing one to a lot of people. Even the goal that was allowed, there was an element of confusion over that as well. A player in an offside position, but I think it's Fernandez again, but he didn't touch it this time, so he left it knowing it was going in. Espanyol need to improve a touch, to be honest. Played 4 games, got 4 points. Sevilla, I think, are in good shape.
Right, leaves us with a couple of goalless draws to briefly whiz through. Malaga nil, Levante nil. Malaga only scored one goal, which is obviously a problem. Failed to score a penalty would have been a very different. Well, he saved it. It was a poor pen, though, wasn't it?
Bizarre penalty, isn't it? And bizarre goalkeeping that paid off. Homework, I guess. Choupo takes it. No deception in it whatsoever. Just hits it straight down the middle. Not particularly hard. It's not a Panenka. And it's unusual just to see the goalkeeper stand there and not move and just palm it away. So that was, that you can't afford to be missing opportunities like that if you're Malaga. That's the blow. They look short at the moment in terms of scoring goals. It's going to be a tough season for them. They didn't bring in the players that Racing did and Depor did. They were the promoted team in the playoffs. Kind of, I hope I'm wrong, but it kind of looks as if it all's happened too soon for them. Promotion.
Apparently they've got leeway to spend money though, because they haven't been spending it, or they were in administration, weren't they? So debts were wiped out. So I think they're capable of spending money if there is any around the club. What was the crowd? Was it?
Oh, it's great atmosphere again.
Yeah. So
It'll be full up. It'll be full up.
they're
Near enough
yeah.
full.
So it, you're bringing money in, so you would hope that. They need some points between now and January, don't they? They need to start picking up some wins, scoring some goals and stuff. So they're still competitive in January, I think.
And then that will give players the possibility of coming to them if they've got a chance. If they're dead and buried, they won't.
And then Real Sociedad nil, Celta Vigo nil is that's from the future. They did play it. It's not just a holding scoreline. So yeah, that's
Confusing. And they're playing
yes.
tonight, Real Sociedad. And Celta. I'm doing Getafe Celta and it's Elche Real Sociedad on Monday night. And the reason we were baffled as to why they brought that forward, they're both in the Europa League this week.
And there's a Europa League night
And
next
as
week.
that's it.
So it's like a Champions
What is a
League
La
thing this
Liga?
week. Yeah, so there's like 3 nights of Champions League this week, and then it's the Europa League next week. And that's it. That's how the European thing now starts. So yeah,
So,
come.
and that week there's a La Liga week of fixtures, and Real Sociedad and Celta were obviously playing in the Europa League, so they brought week six forward to week four.
Yes,
And
yes.
we all missed it, and no one cares.
It was a nil-nil draw, so yeah. So yes, so it's weird actually, isn't it? Because I do think, I mean, the goals per game is good so far in La Liga. You just get the odd stinker thrown in, but I think the referee rules, I hope they stick with it, because how many times over the years have we seen, we're going to do this, we're going to clamp down on this, we're going to keep an eye on this, and then a few weeks in, it all just drifts away and we're back,
And that happens every league, doesn't it? We're going
Yeah.
to clamp down on this, clamp down on that. There's this new rule. So hopefully it is. The one thing that makes a difference, the biggest one, when players go down and they're feigning injury, they're getting up quickly because
Yeah.
they know the law is now, oh shit, I'll have to go off.
Yeah, for a minute. Yeah.
Yeah, or longer.
Yeah.
So they're getting up. Players that in the past you thought, oh, I hope he's all right. And now they're doing
Yeah.
it.
Well,
20 seconds.
because we've
Their
got,
act is now
yeah.
20 seconds instead of
Yeah.
90 seconds.
Or sometimes they even, well, I do a little bit of sympathy, but I think, no, it's the right thing, is where they've had a whack. And you think, but yeah, it does hurt. That would have hurt. But you just need to rub it. You don't need a medical professional to come on. Because they're all they're going to do is spray a bit of something on it for you. The referee should be allowed to have a sticking plaster and just give it to them and then carry on. Right, there we are. Terry, good luck tonight with the game. I hope you get a classic. So it's Hetafe, Celta Vigo. I'm sure you will. I'm sure you
You're
will.
being ironic.
And yes, so thank you for your support, everybody. Enjoy the Champions League, everybody. And we'll be back soon, and we'll see you again for another podcast. Okay, bye bye, everybody. Thanks for your support. Bye bye.